Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning, December 3rd. Currently 22 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And Heber City reporting 27 degrees. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at high temperatures climbing to around the freezing mark today in Park City, so it'll remain on the cold side. Again, we should see a few morning flakes out there. There's a couple of snow showers coming to an end as we go throughout the morning hours. Otherwise, the Heber Valley look for partly cloudy skies as we go throughout the day, with a little more sunshine into the afternoon hours, with highs climbing into the upper 30s. As we go into tonight, get ready for a frigid night out there as temperatures drop down into the low teens across the area. We're looking at low temperatures dipping down to around 10 degrees for us in the Heber Valley coming up tomorrow morning, with low temperatures as we head towards your Thursday morning in Park City dropping down to about 13 to 15 degrees. High temperatures will be very similar Thursday afternoon to what we see today, right around freezing in Park City, with high temperatures into the mid to upper 30s in the Heber Valley. We will see a little bit more sunshine, I think, on your Thursday as opposed to your Wednesday. Now, get ready for more clouds to roll in, though, by Thursday evening into Thursday night. And with those cold temperatures in place, oh yeah, Friday looks to be an interesting day. Looks like we're going to be seeing some moisture coming in with an atmospheric river as we go into the weekend. And so on Friday, we could be talking about periods of snow, locally heavy at times, potentially creating the chance of seeing some decent accumulations out there for us. This will be the case both in Park City and in the Heber Valley, with highs only around freezing in Park City, with highs in the 30s as we get towards the Heber Valley. As we go into the actual weekend, we'll warm things up a little bit, and those snow levels will climb just a little bit. So we'll be looking at still chances of rain and snow as we head into your weekend. But on your Saturday, we'll be looking at more of a rain-snow mix potential for us in the Heber Valley, with, again, that chance of all snow still sticking around for us in the Park City area. By the time we get towards your Sunday, still some lingering moisture around, so the chance of a rain-snow mix will continue as those snow levels slowly rise through the weekend. As we head into next week, we'll see temperatures on the nice side with, again, mainly dry conditions. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And on the phone with us, with a look in the backcountry, on the phone, Drew Hardesty with Utah Avalanche Center. Good morning. Welcome back.
Hey, yeah, morning, Leslie. Yeah, it's great to be back. Winter's sort of dragging its heels a touch, but at least a little bit of a teaser. It looks like along the Park City ridgeline, maybe 1 to 3 inches yesterday and overnight, and maybe just a touch of snow right now, but that should clear up pretty soon. As winter has dragged its heels, the avalanche conditions have sort of fallen in lockstep, although if you get up into the high country, you're going to find just areas of unstable snow. We've just bumped the danger to what we call areas of moderate, again, along the higher elevation bands, primarily in west and north to east facing slopes, where, you know, that it's just sort of the broken record, Leslie. You know, it just seems like every early season we have that snow that falls in October and November and rots and has all the strength of sugar. And so the most recent storms, which is not much, but enough to create an overlying slab, has, again, created some unstable conditions in some areas. There was one natural in upper Little Cottonwood Canyon in the Alta terrain, Devil's Castle, that pulled out naturally. That was probably about a foot deep, 50 feet wide. A couple other pockets triggered and noted by observers yesterday in the backcountry. And so the writing's on the wall, really, for us. So if these storms slated for the weekend materialized, and the avalanche danger is going to ramp up in a hurry, and could be up to considerable, maybe high in some terrain, but that's still a few days off. But again, there's not much terrain out there to ride in the backcountry, but if folks are lured into the upper elevation shady slopes, it's going to be possible that they're going to be able to trigger a slab failing on a persistent weak layer. And as always, you can get more information and more pictures on the web this morning. Brooke had an excellent advisory for the Central Wasatch, and so check that information before you head out into the backcountry today.
Okay, Drew, thanks so much.
Thanks, Leslie.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Community Development Director Peter Barnes. Later on, Deer Valley President and COO Todd Bennett has news on opening day, as well as a preview of this year's historic season with the full opening of East Village. Finally, Park City Troublemakers Renee Hall and Jen Floor with details about this year's lineup of community holiday concerts. On the phone with an update from the Summit County Planning Office, Community Development Director Peter Barnes. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Leslie. From a lightly snowing Colville, I hope you're getting more snow at your end of the valley.
Well, it stopped for now, so it's headed your way.
Excellent.
Let's see. Let's start with any new applications that have come across your desk in the last month. What can you tell us?
Nothing that should really excite the general public. You know, we're in a slowdown season as people are coming to the dramatic realization that getting a planning approval, a building permit, and foundations in before it snows is probably leaving it a little bit late right now. One thing that has attracted the public attention lately is that there are a group of residents on Old Ranch Road who have been concerned, excited, all sorts of reactions to the improvements that Public Works and Engineering have been doing on the Old Ranch Road neighborhood. And we have an associated subdivision application that has been tied into that in the public imagination. And we actually, people are aware of that application. It's a 14-lot subdivision application. We have actually, for those who know and have been following, this has actually been declared a complete application. So now we're actually in the formal planning process, and that will be coming to the Planning Commission early in the new year, so the public will be able to get seriously involved at that stage. Otherwise, generally, a few projects in and around the canyons drawing attention. Nothing new. The news is generally about all the projects that we've been following for the last few weeks.
Okay, give us a location on that 14-lot subdivision there off Old Ranch Road.
How do I describe it? Because it doesn't actually have an address so much.
Yeah,
Where we've been recently, it's actually a 200-acre parcel of land. It was an existing subdivision application that was approved back in 2016, had an extension, or 2017, had another extension. And finally, they've not filed or recorded that plat, and they're coming back with a revised version of that plat. It's how do I describe it? East Old Ant Road. I can probably come up with an address.
I'm guessing, is it kind of on the south side of the north end of Old Ranch Road there?
Yeah, it's kind of, you go past Quarry Mountain Ranch, those people who know that. Past the Osgathorpe farm area. It's just a little bit past that, but on the other side of the road.
Okay. Let's see. What's the latest with the Dakota Pacific property? This has been to Planning Commission, but...
We were actually there last week, one of the first stages in their approval before they're allowed to apply for any actual project applications. They have to get their architectural design standards approved. We spent a good couple of hours at a work session a few weeks ago with the Planning Commission and the draft set of the standards. And last week we went back to the Planning Commission with a revised set with some comments, got some additional comments. The standards were actually voted to be moved up to the manager level where they will be approved. Well, once they're actually approved by the manager, then actually releases DPRE to actually start making formal applications, subdivisions, start the long process of coming through developments. But there's a lot of behind the scenes programming. The county and DPRE obviously have a joint venture portion of this development, so the details and arrangements of that financing responsibility, project planning for that is actually an ongoing concern and will be for probably months to come.
Yeah. So would this project move this fast if it didn't have the special privileges that it does? I mean, if it was just a regular project coming through?
If it was a regular project coming through, it would it would be a lot smaller. So, like an individual final site, they will actually be going through the requirement. Any individual project, for example, if a building similar to Skullcandy, for example, I'm not saying there is one, but say another Skullcandy appeared on the horizon and was part of this plan, they would actually go through the normal application review process for that building. What the agreement has done with the administrative development agreement and the whole master planning process is lay out the infrastructure framework within which these projects can be placed. So they will be a pretty fast track, because some of the basic background information has already been formed and decided and agreed to with the development agreement. So we'll then get into the nitty-gritty of each individual project approval.
Okay. Moving on, the Utah Olympic Park update. At its last meeting, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission postponed the decision on a series of amendments to the development agreement after planning commissioners said they needed more specifics. So will it come back to the commission this year?
The UOP themselves are actually desperate to be back on the Planning Commission agenda next Tuesday. We're having discussions about that today, because a lot of the information that was requested by the Planning Commission, we as planning staff have yet to receive. So our chances of receiving that, analyzing it, and providing a legitimate opinion to the Planning Commission, in my mind, today, I'm agnostic about it, but I'm veering on the side of caution rather than saying, yeah, we're just going to go full throttle and into a recommendation. We might not be able to do that, but we that's been an ongoing discussion for the last couple of days. Significant information from our perspective is required. From UOP's perspective, they have a different belief about the origins of the application and why they believe they're entitled to something. We believe that might be true. However, they do need to demonstrate what the impacts of those entitlements are. So that's the conversation we're having. We want to have a useful conversation at Planning Commission. If we can do it by next Tuesday, we will work our fingers to the bone to achieve that. I believe it's our obligation to try and provide that service to any applicant, but we clearly don't want to rush into a decision on such a large project.
Yeah, now, so is the December 9th the only time that Planning Commission is meeting this month?
That's the end of it for the remainder of the year. So there's the one meeting left this year. And that meeting, if there's no substantive changes to the proposal, then it would not be a public hearing. The public hearing was closed at the last meeting. If there are substantive changes, then the Planning Commission themselves could have the option of reopening it, but it's not been noticed as such. So they would not be able to hold a public hearing next Tuesday. Would just be a discussion. If the information is laid out and the Planning Commission is satisfied that they can make some kind of recommendation to move it up to council, then that's their purview. But as of today, I personally think there's missing information right now, but by the end of the day, that might have changed.
Yeah, and you mentioned desperate for a decision. That's because they'd like to get started as soon as possible after this year's competition schedule, is my guess.
Clearly, like a lot of our development projects, they are strictly governed by the weather and what they actually do, how they operate. You know, if you're a ski resort, you don't want to be under full blown construction during ski season. You want to be open. If you're the Utah Olympic Park, they want to be in use. If one of the public concerns was the closing down of the training facilities at the pool, for example. It's difficult to keep that pool open while you've got a major construction project going around it. So when are you going to close it? Obviously, for the summertime training in a pool, that has, you have to close it down in summer during the construction season, and that's when you want to use it. So you want to keep that closure period as short as possible. Mm-hmm. So the longer lead-in time and planning time the UOP can have, the better. But as soon as the snow melts, I'm sure they're going to want to move as fast as they can. And that's going to be a lot of conversations and a lot of detailed design between now and spring.
Sure. All right. And Junction Commons, formerly the Outlet Mall, has that rezone gone through?
It has not. We had a little hiccup. They were on the agenda for a motion last Tuesday. At the last minute, there was a discrepancy in the water provisions for the project. We had no choice at that point. There was a plan for the water. There was a last-minute hiccup in terms of, shall we say, the paperwork. We believe that there's a plan that could be put in place for that water. But as of the Monday before the meeting last Tuesday, with the planning staff, when we had a staff report that said they met the requirements for the provision of water, and that circumstance changed. It does not mean they cannot meet that requirement, but that, you know, we could not go to the planning commission saying we've ticked all the boxes and the project complied. So we're having a quick meeting with that now and see how soon they're going to be back on the agenda as soon as possible, as soon as we have that plan laid out. Yep. And agreed to. And we anticipate, and I don't want to put the words in the Planning Commission's mouths, a recommendation to move it up.
Yeah, we're talking like more than 500 residential units between apartments and upper floor housing on top of commercial in the lower area. Does any of that include affordable housing for their requirement?
Yes, it does. Without going to the actual numbers, there's a significant portion of the affordability requirements. I believe if you think about the traditional housing requirement for affordable housing in a residential project, one would say 20% of the market rate housing is added on as an affordable requirement. With the NMU request, the request is typically a 50% requirement for affordable housing, but there are reductions allowed for building the affordable units up front. So the affordable units they're proposing to build up front will actually result in not a 25% reduction in what they're required to create, but a 16% reduction in what they're required to create. A lot of complex numbers. Happy to go into analysis and lay the numbers out in specifics if anybody's interested and wants to get in touch. But on paper, it meets all the requirements, but it is going to be a significant change to that neighborhood.
Okay. Finally, I wanted to ask you about the county council has noticed a public hearing and possible vote for the creation of a resort core public infrastructure district, number one, on December 17th. Can you tell us what a PID is and what the council will be voting on?
A PID, this is that quasi-planning tool that the planning department rarely get involved with. In fact, we haven't been involved with the planning department in this one whatsoever. A PID is a public improvement district or a public infrastructure district. If you you understand that any development has a significant amount of cost associated with it. Before you can actually get any kind of return on investment from a developer perspective, if you want to build a building, start collecting rents, or sell some units, you have to lay out a significant sum of money in the building of normal infrastructure, public infrastructure, road infrastructure, sewer, water. So a PID is a financing mechanism. Typically, you'd sell bonds, like a 20-year bond or a 40-year bond, to raise the capital that allows you to build the infrastructure with that capital. It's then paid back by the properties that are within the PID. So a PID is like a special taxing district. It's a very localized district. Everyone knows that if you're in the Park City School District, you pay taxes to Park City School District. If you're in the North Summit School District, you pay taxes to them. They're special taxing districts. A PID is a very localized taxing entity that the owners of the property within that taxing district pay an incremental tax over the life of the PID. It's usually the 20 years or 40 years to return the capital that was used for the bond. And the bond money is used to pay for the infrastructure itself. So it's an advanced form of financing.
Yeah, so the fact that it is numbered as number one, does that mean that there are more to come?
I honestly don't know. I tend to think that numbers and names behind things have little meaning in the legal world. You'll see that in the title of every contract. You know, headings to chapters don't really mean anything. They're just there as a guidance. But it does imply such a thing. They're not uncommon. We don't do them very often. It is in this respect, a public infrastructure district. So I presume, you know, the money is, you know, geared up for roads, transportation facilities, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. So the boundaries are in the Canyons Village. It looks like a lot of the land is around part of the golf course there by the Orange Bubble. So we've got more hotels to come down there, huh?
There's more development there. If you think about the area between the parking garage and 224 there, there's actually a development parcel there which has always been listed for some form of commercial development. So in order to promote things like that and other development on the roads, obviously it helps if it's around bus transportation, then it's actually in the county's interest to accelerate the infrastructure side of it rather than the buildings themselves. That would be up to the development area itself. That will go through a normal process, but in order to advance the infrastructure so that the development is actually benefiting in the same way that the county benefits without causing the impacts that would fall on the general population.
Yeah, so does TCFC, do they have an application in, or do they need to get this PID done first before they apply?
The applications and PID are separate from each other. We have not seen any application. As recently as a couple of weeks ago, we saw a potential future map, but it was very general in terms of labeling, you know, potential areas of commercial development, etc. But they're all within the normal Canyon SPAR agreement anyway, so nothing outside the existing master plan. It's just how do we move this project forward. Obviously, if you look at the parking garage, which they've been pouring concrete as recently as yesterday in an effort to move things and finish that off, the PID is more likely to move, you know, once that is funded, then in order to start paying that back, you'd then need the development to take place in order to pay the taxes back.
Okay, I got to leave it there. Peter, thanks so much for your time. Happy holidays, and we'll talk to you next year.
Thanks, Leslie. Same to you. Enjoy the holidays.
Well, just as all resorts across the state did, Deer Valley Resort delayed its opening for the 2025-26 ski season, but the wait is over. In the studio with details, I have the president and COO, Todd Bennett. Good morning, Todd.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. So I guess drum roll, and I'm on your website, notice that you do have single day tickets for sale on Saturday, so that kind of like, is it happening?
It's happening, Leslie. You're here to hear it first. We're going to open on Saturday, December 6th to the public. And we're actually going to open on Friday, December 5th for our Deer Valley season pass holders. And so, yeah, we tried to get started a little bit earlier this year. We shifted the date up, and then we've just ended up shifting it back to where we're going to be to begin with.
Yeah, okay. Well, tell us, so what's going to be open for both pass holders Friday and the public Saturday?
Yeah, we're going to have three lifts open. We're going to have Sterling and Birdseye there. We're going to have Silver Link coming up from the top of Little Baldy, and then we'll have Success down to the base. Mm-hmm. Snowmaking teams have really enjoyed this cold weather. They're making a ton of snow, and we hope to open more terrain quickly.
Yeah, and I guess you've kind of got a season under your belt in terms of how that mountain progression goes and in terms of opening. So is East Village kind of like the last to open going forward, or?
No, this year it's going to be, it'll open a little bit later this year just because we're putting the final touches on the pipes and the pump houses and all those details. We did start testing the snowmaking system there and pressurizing the water on Monday. So I suspect we'll be making snow over there within the week.
All right. Will you focus, though, on the front of the mountain? Is that the idea, or this side of the mountain?
No, they're actually, there's three different snowmaking systems. There's multiple. There's actually more than three, but predominantly you think about it in a zone of the existing or the Deer Valley on the Park City side. We have a lower mountain snowmaking system, we have an upper mountain snowmaking system, and then all of the East Village has its kind of a completely different snowmaking system, different water rights, and that comes in. And so we can run all of that concurrently. So the intent is to run it all. I think we'll get up to 18,000 gallons a minute this year.
Wow. In years past, that you've had about 100 runs total. So is the total now 200 runs?
202 runs. That's right, Leslie. Yeah. So, we're truly doubling the size of the resort this year. We had three lifts come online a little bit early last year, as you probably know. We're adding seven more. So we're going to open 10 new 10 new chairlifts in the span of 13 months, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And I guess, what's your forecast then for getting the entire mountain open?
Forecast is looking good. As we all know, it was a little bit of a warmer November, but it's going. The temperatures have been fantastic this past week. It looked like we're going to continue to get some natural snow filling in between now and Christmas. So a little hard to say exactly where and when. We, as my partner and in crime, Steve Graff, who runs mountain operations, says you don't count it till it's on the ground. But it's looking good.
Yeah, I mean the season's being billed as one of the most historic in Deer Valley's history. I mean, once this is done, is there more to come?
There is. There's more to come. We've got Park Peak Lodge is not coming on this year. Park Peak Lodge will be sitting at the top of Park Peak, which is where the gondola ends from the East Village. So if you go from the East Village, take that gondola all the way to the top. That gondola will be operational this year. When you get up there, you're going to see an incredible skeleton of a brand new 60,000 square foot building up there. That'll be a beautiful lodge facing out towards Timpanogos. We've got a couple more chairlifts planned. I don't think we've announced them, so I'm going to hold on those and specificity. But yeah, we've got more. We've got a. But I think what the guest was going to see that's going to be a big change after the season is Park Peak Lodge. It's just an incredible facility that's going to come online.
Yeah. How much of a construction zone is going on? As people get on the mountain later this season.
Let's see. So, most of the construction on mountain is tied up for the winter. Obviously, we had a lot of, I think we had almost 50 miles of snowmaking pipe put in this season over the last two seasons. So, obviously, that's all closed up. When on the mountain, you'd see, you're going to see the skeleton of Park Peak Lodge down at the base of East Village. Our partners, Extel, are continuing to develop a lot of their space down there. So, I think you'll see some construction down there. But by and large, it'll be pretty buttoned up for winter.
Yeah. And so for those who do travel over onto that expansion site, I mean, are they going to have amenities? There won't be a lodge.
No, the lodge is scheduled a couple of years from now where we'll have our kind of traditional skier services. But we do have a temporary facility over there this year. So we'll have over 100 dining seats, some outdoor dining seats to augment the interior seats. We'll have skier services, meaning tickets, and we'll have a little bit of ski rentals. So we have a temporary structure right over there. So we have 1,200 parking spaces over there, which is amazing. So for those who might live a little further out of town or in the Wasatch Back, you really have two options to come in, or maybe three. You could come into Snow Park, you could go to the Jordanelle Gondola, or you could go over to the East Village. With those 1,200 parking spaces, you'll get on a very short tram ride, much like you do at Snow Park, and that's going to drop you right at that temporary skier services building.
Yeah, so in terms of a percentage increase in skiers. I mean, what are you forecasting? Because again, that's dependent on restrooms available and dining options.
Yeah, very fair. We look at all of those things. So we look at the terrain capacity, we look at the lift capacity, we look at the dining capacity. We've made a few adjustments to dining this year. You're going to see a temporary dining, outdoor dining space at Silver Lake. So right off the deck, we have a sprung structure that you'll be able to, on those busier days, you'll be able to take your tray and actually have heated indoor seats right off the deck. So that'll be nice. We've made some adjustments on the throughput there. Working with our partners at Stein's, they're adding a Stein's Burger concept right at the top of Viking. Mariposa, which has traditionally been a table service restaurant, that actually is going to be all additional seating at Silver Lake for day guests, so that'll be nice as well. So while we don't get into specific numbers, we do limit the number of skiers on the mountain every day. We are currently out of space for Icon Pass holders and one-day ticket sales for 7 days over Christmas. So we're kind of sticking to that tradition of really limiting it. And dining is the limiter this year. The terrain is very unlikely to be the limiter. So we're going to see a little bit of increase in that daily kind of limit, but not significant.
Yeah. And I guess with the new chairlift network, I mean, how do these lifts kind of change the flow and capacity of the mountain?
Yeah, that's the fun part of operations. So, we have obviously myself and Garrett and Steve and the crew on the mountain operations side. We have some really good theories, right? Having watched skiing for decades of how skier traffic moves, we have some really good ideas on how we think it's going to move, but you never know until you get into the operation. So it's going to spread folks out quite a bit. When you add 2,000 acres of skiing, 100 new trails, 10 new lifts, it's going to really spread out the skier visitation. And it's a completely a wait and see. You know, we've got that Park Peak. We've got some great beginner terrain at the top of the East Village gondola up on Park Peak. So imagine a family who might normally start out on Wide West or kind of feel that there's only a couple pockets around the mountain that they could go to. Take that East Village gondola top of Park Peak, circulate on Lift 7 Pinion, and you've got some great lower intermediate terrain that you're going to have incredible views up there.
Yeah, I think I asked that question because I recall last season the bottleneck that happened at Sultan. Will this help with the new lifts, kind
sure.
of disperse that?
Yeah, Sultan was a one-year problem. We did predict it. It did come to fruition probably by mid-February when folks kind of figured out the pattern there. It was about 11 a.m. to about 1 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. I was there most Saturdays and Sundays just helping that. And that's because we had a six-passenger Keatley Express. And if you were not circulating off that lift, you were coming down to Sultan, which was a four-pack. But now we've got two lifts down there. We've got the six-pack, but you also have the East Village gondola going up to Park Peak. So we anticipate, we don't know until we get into operation, but we anticipate that that pinch point at Sultan, the base of Sultan, will be gone completely.
Yeah. Any surprises or big challenges that you faced during in construction maybe that stand out?
You know, I think what was not the best for getting snowmaking started, a little bit of warmer weather here in early November did allow the construction teams to tie a few more things up, so that was pretty nice. Challenges, you know, I think I don't know if it's a challenge, but the thing that we've been focusing most on is, you know, Deer Valley has a great history of service, attention to detail, and making sure that as we scale the business, as we scale the experience, that we don't lose sight of what Polly and Edgar put out in front of us, what Bob Wheaton and the team did for many, many years. So that's probably been the biggest focus, and that's less tangible, right? You can see when a snowmaking pipe is installed or not installed, but that cultural piece is the piece that's a little bit harder to put your finger on, and so we've made a really strong effort to both training new staff, but even for existing staff, just reinforce who are we, what we're known for, and make sure that we're delivering on the Deer Valley difference.
Okay, I want to go back to staffing, but so in addition to like the Friday, the early opening for season pass holders, any other kind of unique opportunities that pass holders will have this season? I think last year you offered skiing at 8 a.m. some days.
We haven't announced that, but you can count on some 8 a.m. openings this year. That was not specific for pass holders, Deer Valley pass holders, but they were by far the majority of folks taking advantage of that over the peak holiday. So we anticipate announcing some 8 a.m. openings over those peak holiday days again this year. What else? So for Deer Valley season pass holders, another benefit is maybe different than the Icon Pass. Deer Valley season pass does not have to make a reservation. So that's a nice benefit. Icon passes, you do have to make a reservation. And then this year at Jordanelle Gondola, that's one of the most popular lots. We want to make sure we're encouraging visitation to the East Village as well so that people know that it's there. So we are going to shift the lower parking lot kind of from the main road down at the Jordanelle Gondola, that's going to become a paid lot. Now, however, if you are three or more guests per vehicle or you have a Deer Valley season pass, there is no charge. So that will be another benefit for Deer Valley season pass holders.
Yeah. And in terms of kind of lodging reservations for the season with Deer Valley Lodging, what are you seeing?
It's looking really good. We are ahead of last year. I don't have the percentages with me, but I do know we are ahead of last year. Paid ticket sales are looking strong. Deer Valley season pass are looking strong. Icon reservations are looking strong. So we're anticipating a good year, but we're going to hold consistent to what we've done, which is we're going to limit skiers, and I anticipate a number of more days throughout the season that will get capped and turned off. So if you're an Icon pass holder out there, or you're thinking about buying some one-day tickets, I'd encourage you to buy it sooner rather than later.
Okay, so there seems to be a lot of excitement to come check it out.
For sure. Yeah.
Let's see, how is hiring going? I mean, are the J-1 visa holders still coming in this political climate?
Yeah, we're going to be up around 3,500 staff this year. That's about 500 more than last year. We added a bunch more beds for staff coming in. It's a good flag. The J-1 visas have been a little bit more challenging this year than in the past, but we've had good support from Utah Congress folks to help kind of push that along and identify those issues. So I would say there's a couple pockets on the J1 side that are a little bit slower than we've seen in the past, but at large, we are in a great position for hiring. Most locations or most spaces are 100% hired.
Yeah, really, that's impressive. Mm-hmm. What's the hardest job to fill?
You know, I think one of the hardest jobs is back of house kitchen. If anybody's ever worked in the back of house at a kitchen, those are challenging jobs. The steward positions, the dishwashers, those can be more challenging to fill. But you know, we've got even some of the colder jobs on the mountain. The mountain hosts, one of the most sought after positions on the mountain, one of the hardest jobs to get. And yes, they do get to ski around, but they also stand out, greet guests out in the cold for a long time. So that one is actually a surprisingly easy one to fill.
Yeah. So with such a major milestone just about complete, when do you direct your attention back to Snowpark?
Yeah, that's a very fair question. You know, we're still working in the background on some of those pieces, looking at the CUP2, which would be the second conditional use permit. And so we've got a little bit of work going on there, but by and large, we are focused on the opening. You know, I anticipate, it's a little hard to say, we anticipate the lifts and trails kind of opening through January, which is kind of traditional in the business. But bringing on that much new equipment, that many new trails, that much more terrain is going to pose a number of unintended challenges. And so, you know, I would say probably by the end of the season, start shifting back over that way and thinking about what are the next steps there. But as a team, we're very focused on making sure that that eastern expansion is to the Deer Valley quality that people expect.
Okay, so any update at this point with that public-private partnership with Park City Municipal?
The only thing that I would update is that what folks probably saw already, which was a few weeks ago, that we did formalize that public-private partnership. Very proud of what we did. I think it was a great compromise between the city. It was something that ultimately binds Deer Valley and the city together to go find creative solutions for transportation, for housing. And we both put in and committed to quite a large sum of money to make that happen. So other than what's probably already been reported on, there's nothing new. But we're in a position to move forward with that hurdle cleared.
Yeah, so Deer Valley pulled back from a community reinvestment agency, a CRA, earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Some speculation that maybe you're talking to MIDA, maybe they can help you with the financing of that.
Yeah, that's not something that I've been involved or aware of. Folks on my team that have been talking to MIDA on the financing side. The CRA piece, as far as I know, is just something that we're not going to do. I think, although that said, even I'm learning in the role that there's a lot of different opportunities and financing mechanisms and public support that we could look at. So I'm kind of getting up to speed on some more mechanisms on what we might be able to do. But, you know, a project of the scale of Snowpark is massive, and it is something that we got to make sure that we get right, because it's kind of right at the base of Deer Valley.
Yeah, and any news with regard to a possible gondola connection from Main Street to Deer Valley?
No, there's nothing specific. You know, I know folks have talked about that. I think from a conceptual standpoint, whether it be Main Street or just aerial transit in general, I think are great ideas to be thinking about. Any way that we can get cars off the road or get people into alternate transportation, you know, a lot of folks will cite examples over in Europe that work really well. I've had a chance to experience that on a couple of trips over there, and it's pretty awesome. It's a great experience for the guest. It does pull a lot of people off the road, and that's a solution that I think we should be looking at Park City, but there's no specific project.
Yeah, and as part of that public-private partnership agreement, Deer Valley is coming up with $15 million to deal with either transportation or housing.
That's
what
right.
What are you leaning toward here?
Yeah, well, and to clarify, you know, the idea is that Deer Valley puts $15 million into the middle of the table. The city would put in $15 million, and then while not a specific obligation, Deer Valley and the city could go look for other partners to find other sources of funding to bring to that so that we could get to a mass of dollars that could actually help. You know, I think we're likely to be the minority investor when all is said and done on that in terms of investor is probably even the wrong term, contributor. So we would have a seat at the table, but we're probably not going to be the ones that say, here's where we go. I think both. I think having additional satellite lots that are convenient would be super helpful. I think in that same zone, it would be great to have some affordable housing, because if you're going to have a satellite lot that's built here or close to town, you're going to want to have bus transportation from there. And so to have a few beds there for affordable housing would be amazing as well. So to me, it seems like those are the two biggest areas, and if we could find a way to do both in the same location, that would be ideal.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention about opening day?
Let us know.
Okay. And again, congrats on the World Ski Awards.
I think it's 13 years in a row. Yeah.
Good job.
Thanks, Leslie.
Okay. Todd Bennett is the president and COO of Deer Valley Resort. Well, Park City Troublemakers will be performing their annual holiday concert, and in the studio with details about where you can hear them sing, I have singers Renee Hall and Jen Floor. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So how many concerts do you have planned?
We have two full concerts, actually, but the Salon concert, which will be this Sunday, that one is sold out. We are taking a wait list, but the wait list, honestly, is getting a little bit long. So I would encourage everyone to instead plan for our community concert, which is the following Sunday, December 14th at 4 o'clock. And that's at the Park City Community Church, which is the church they will find right behind the Park City Nursery.
Okay. And tickets are available at the door or online? I mean, if you're selling out.
Yes. For the community concert, we have advance purchase tickets available on Venmo. And our address on Venmo is capital PC, smaller case, Treble-Makers. And if they ask for a phone code, it's 4106. Or you can just buy it at the door for $18. We take cash, credit card, any old thing, and children 12 and younger are $10 at the door.
Okay. So, Jen, maybe you start, just back up a little bit and just tell us, who are the Troublemakers?
The Troublemakers are a group of 16 women, mostly from Park City. A couple of us are from Salt Lake and the Heber area. And we get together once a week and rehearse at Colleen's home, who graciously has us there. She's fantastic. We're a cappella, meaning no piano, no instrumental accompaniment. And we have a Christmas repertoire that we do, and then we have a spring concert of different selections, and we get together to sing. We're all a little bit different in personality, but everyone is musical, loves to sing, and we adore each other. It's fantastic.
So you mentioned the musical director, Colleen who?
Colleen Earnshaw is her name.
Uh-huh. Okay, so she's been with you for a while now, yeah?
She has. Colleen started out as a singer with us. She was a first soprano. And when Shelley Jennings retired, oh gosh, it's been probably 7 or 8 years ago now, Colleen took over. And we are very grateful, very grateful. She's been terrific.
Yeah. So how is it that that's done? I mean, you got to have one piano key, no? Just so that somebody knows where to start singing?
Sure. So Colleen usually sends each individual part recorded, either through her computer or she plays it on the pianos. And we learn the parts with the piano keys mostly. And we do that at home. And then together, or when we get together, she'll play the parts if needed. But we come as prepared as possible to start a cappella and sing together. Yeah. It helps when we hear each other in the parts, because none of us always has the melody. So it really helps to see where we fit in. But there's a piano right there at all times.
Oh, so she'll hit a key then.
Just
so that you kind of...
And then in the concert, she on her phone, she has a pitch pipe that starts each key.
All right. So 16, is that just because it's a nice round number with four vocal parts, four in each?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly why.
Second alto, first alto, second soprano, and soprano. Those are the four parts.
Okay.
From bottom to top.
Okay. Now, do you have to be invited to be a troublemaker?
Well, it helps to know somebody, I suppose you might say, because you would need to know when there is an opening, because we fill openings as a particular section might, you know, say, for instance, a first soprano decides to travel a great deal or something of that nature, and they may take retirement, essentially.
Yeah. So what are the songs that you will be performing then on the 14th?
I have a list, conveniently. The title of the concert is Merry Christmas, because we do start off with the song Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, which was from Home Alone 2. And then we have a... There's 16 of these. Do you want me to...
some of the highlights, yeah.
Okay. Well, I could tell you about a couple that I think are going to be very, very popular. For years, people have been asking us to do the Christmas song, which is the one that starts off with chestnuts roasting on the open fire. We are doing it this year, so I'm really pleased to have that in our repertoire. We have some very traditional ones, like a combination of Holy Night, Silent Night, which makes it very different by combining those two. Take off on Patapan, the little French song. Ding a ding. Oh boy, that one's a challenge.
We have a lot of rhythmic and syllable jinglings in the song. Patapan, ding a ding, ring silver bells, jingle bells, even has a lot of jings in it. Makes it fun, but between the traditional songs and a little more current and popular songs, it's a nice mix.
Yes, and that Linus and Lucy, uh-huh. Also, that's just a lot of da-da-da.
That's very fun, yeah.
So, yes, and Sleigh Ride and...
First Noel.
Yes.
And will you feature any soloists?
There are some solos within some of these songs, I would say. No solos, no full-on solos.
Yeah, and then who chooses the musical pieces?
Colleen. Colleen does.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
It's not a committee sort of an affair. However, she does take suggestions. So frequently we will come to her with some sort of a suggestion. In fact, I think last year Karen Bechtel is the one that received a YouTube of Snow, Snow, Snow. So we are doing that one this year, and Jenny was really instrumental in putting that together for us so that we could sing it, and it's going to be really cute. Full costumes and all. Oh, I shouldn't say full costumes, but there will be a little
props.
Bit of costume. Yes, let's call it that.
So you can add that to your titles then too, Jenny, as a musical arranger?
I've helped with that. There was no sheet music for that. We didn't have sheet music, so I listened to it many, 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 many times and figured out some parts that are mostly similar, not completely accurate, I'm sure, but close enough. It's fun, yeah.
Now, that sounds like a lot of work for two shows. I mean, are you going to start doing some of your traditional... I mean, I know that you visit senior centers. Are you going to do that as well?
Yes. We have a total of, I believe I counted up, 12 performances. Some of them are for the various Rotaries here in town. We have a new one, which is for the Wasatch Back Single Adults Holiday Party. I'm kind of excited to go to that. I'm married, but nonetheless, I think it'll be fun to see that, what goes on there. Jeremy Ranch and the Senior Center. And we'll also be over at our very first performance, in fact, is tomorrow afternoon. At Spring Gardens, thank you.
In Heber.
And they've always been very, they've received us very warmly, mm-hmm. and we really enjoy singing for them.
Okay, how do people find out about the salon dates? Because like, as you mentioned, that those always tickets sell fast.
Yes.
And there's probably not that many, right? Because it's a private home?
Correct, yes. This year we were able to accommodate 60 people, and still we cannot accommodate everyone that would like to come. So the way you find out about that, if you keep track of the website, I try to post those as quickly as I have a date. And our website is parkcitytreblemakers.org. And you'll find there a contact email. You can also follow us on Facebook, which is the Park City Troublemakers, and on Instagram is at New Park City Troublemakers. So all of these sources are available to you, virtually anyone. We also do a little bit of directly emailing our friends and families and neighbors and so forth. So if you wish to be put on a mailing list, certainly we would be very open to that idea.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about the concerts?
We're just looking forward to it. It's such a great time of year. And I'm thrilled that we get to perform as much as we do because it's just fun. It's festive.
I would like to add that a portion of our sales will go to benefit the Christian Center Food Bank. It's been kind of a tough year, I think, for a lot of people, and we decided to support them. And also, I'd like to mention that there is a kind of a holiday reception immediately following the community concert. And we hope everyone that attends will stick around so that we can greet you and share holiday cheer with you.
Okay. Renee Hall, Jenny Floor with Park City Troublemakers, thanks so much.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you, Leslie.